There's my music. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Dr. Lori Buckley is with me again. We are friends. We are colleagues. She's a wonderful woman. Her book is 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And I'm delighted that Lori Buckley is back on this program. Hello, Dr. Lori.
Hello, Dr. Diana. So good to be here again.
Yes. It's really good to have you, and we're going to make this show a little more on the positive wavelength, although in the past we have discussed loss, and that was an important show, too, because many years ago I lost my husband, Charlie, to an unexpected heart attack, and it's been about a year now since Alan died in a Thailand traffic accident?
Yeah, it'll actually be 2 years in March. So we're getting closer to the two-year mark. Yeah, and sometimes it feels easier and sometimes not. But, yeah, we've talked about loss before. We've certainly talked about more pleasant things. But, you know, you can't have one without the other, right? In life,
absolutely.
We have loss, we have gain, we have struggle, we have accomplishments. And they really do go hand in hand. So today, since it's the week of Thanksgiving, we're going to be talking about positive things, right?
Yes, and you suggested in your email that we talk about, given that Thanksgiving is 2 days away, that we talk about the importance of gratitude, appreciation, kindness, and love. And all of this, well, you say for thriving and passionate relationships, but it's also really good internal work, personal work, isn't it, to express
Absolutely.
Gratitude? Yeah.
Yeah, and such a better way to live. You know, I call that living above the line. Yeah, absolutely. When we can live in gratitude and appreciate the things we have and be kind to others and accepting of ourselves and others, not only are our relationships better, but we're better.
We're better, and your book is quite wonderful. It's so very positive, and it's about making decisions. And I just wanted to say before I ask you some questions about your book, you know, I think that a lot of times people get advice. You and I don't do it, but I don't think, but lots of don'ts, like don't nag, don't stonewall. But we know that the happiest couples focus on do's, on the do's, not the don'ts.
Yes.
Yeah, so they actively work to build positivity into their relationships. And psychologists call this an approach orientation, moving toward what's good rather than moving away from what's bad. And that's really a lot of the essence of your book.
It's true. You know, it's easier to, and this is what you're saying, to add a positive than to take away a negative. It's also much more effective when we're communicating. So if you are not liking something that your partner's doing, if you tell them what not to do or what you don't like, you're probably not going to get what it is that you want. It's not going to be received very well. But when you can let them know what you would like and, you know, what does make you happy, you're going to have a partner who's probably going to want to give that to you and show up in that way.
Yes. You open your chapter 2. And listeners, this is a great book. You can get it on Amazon, 21 Great Decisions, or 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And you open chapter 2, Cherish Your Partner, with, I think, a wonderful quote from Leo Buscaglia. Am I pronouncing his last name right? Something. It's close.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember him. I mean, he hasn't been around for, I think he died maybe 20 years ago, but he had a television show, and he was always so positive, and I'm really glad you opened your chapter to Cherish Your Partner with his quote, which I will say now. Too often, we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. And that is so true.
Good. It really is. Yes. Even if it's a stranger, you know, walking down the street and you smile at a stranger, I know when that happens on the others, on the other side of that, it feels really good. You know, it just feels nice to feel warmth coming from other people. And it also feels just as good, maybe even better, to be giving it out. Certainly with ones we love, but it works with all people. All people
and,
we come across.
You know, and I really, really like to genuinely compliment service people, because oftentimes they don't get complimented. They get complaints. So if I see a grocery bagger, you know, I did it yesterday when I was shopping for Thanksgiving. I'm ahead of the game here, yes. Shopping already.
Yeah, good for you. Good
I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just to say thank you to the person bagging up all the stuff. Thank you. What a good job you did. You know, it's so easy to do that, and it means a lot to people, but especially in relationships. And that's where we're going to put our focus for this program.
Yeah, it's sometimes harder in relationships, right? It's easier to do sometimes with a stranger or a bad person or a server or waitress or waiter than it is with somebody we're having a relationship with, because it's so easy to be angry with them or to feel hurt by them. And when we are at our worst, when we're not so kind, it's usually because we're in a place of pain. Right. There's some kind of pain going on. And you know what they say, you always hurt the one you love. And there's truth in that. It's easy to find things to be upset about or be hurt by people who you live with and love so dearly. And that's why it's more important to be kind and to find a way to connect. Because when they're being not kind, again, they're feeling hurt. When we're not being kind, it's usually because we're feeling some kind of pain or we're not feeling loved. And so when we can act loving rather than waiting for them to do something to make us feel better, it puts us in a place of power rather than, you know, a victim.
Yes, and you talk in your book about how some people will really expect that, oh, I could do this if only my partner were more loving or were more kind. And so the decision has to be, I will do it first. And then that often sets the tone, doesn't it, for the rest of the the relationship.
Yeah, because we cannot make people do things or control what people do or how they respond to us. But we have 100% control of how we behave, the things we do and the things we say. And when we approach it from a place of kindness or appreciation or love or acceptance, all of those wonderful things we aspire to be, we will usually end up with our partner being more of those things as well. But we just need to do it because it's right. It feels good for us, not necessarily to get something in return, because sometimes we won't. But it will still feel good for us to be in that place.
I'm reminded of in the Jewish tradition, there's the mitzvah. And the nice thing about the mitzvah is that it's a good deed that you do without actually any anticipation that you'll get something back or that you'll even be recognized for it. So it's kind of a pure good deed, a mitzvah. And
yes.
Do you remember, Lori, I remember going to his workshop probably over 30 years ago. Dr. Sol Gordon, he did a lot of trainings about adolescent sexuality and how to teach adolescents about sex. And then I remember him on the Oprah Winfrey show, and this is, I'm sure, at least 30 years ago, and he said one really good way to help distressed adolescent girls is to get them into a program where they can do mitzvahs, where they can help others, and it builds their self-esteem. Not that a true mitzvah, you know, you're not looking for anything in return, but it does that when you're doing a mitzvah.
And for depressed people, too. I mean, one of the, you know, the best interventions is to, you know, have them do something to help other people. It just takes us out of ourselves, and it feels so good. So, yeah, do we get something in return? I mean, it's hard not to, right? Mm-hmm. Even if the other person doesn't do anything. I mean, we do. We feel good. So we always get something in return. That's just not our main motive.
Exactly. Now, I want to circle back to kind of the, you say 21 decisions for great sex and so on. Why are decisions different?
So when I talk about decisions, and I know you hear this all the time, whenever people make great changes in their life, they will always say, or something's going well, they will pretty much always, I hear it all the time, and I'll say, well, wow, what happened? They'll report something really great happened, and they'll say, well, I decided, whatever it might be, you know, I decided I was going to work out every day, or I decided I was going to do something differently, or I decided I was going to be a better wife or better husband. So there's something about the decision that is tied to really being, I'm going to say, clear about what it is that you want, and, you know, being so clear about it and knowing that you really want this thing and understanding why. And there's a level of commitment. So, you know, we have choices. We always have choices. It's a little bit different. The choices, we choose A or B, whichever choice we make, there's always positive and negative consequences. But with a decision, it is this commitment and this clarity about what it is we want or how we want to be. And then we act congruently, you know, moving towards that thing. And it's a very positive, strong place to be coming from, that place of decision.
And that's really the focus of your book, because you have these 21 decisions, and within each chapter, you have action steps. So for your chapter, which ties in very well with our theme for today, which is on gratitude, with Thanksgiving coming up, you say, to have a thriving relationship and a passionate sex life, you need to love your partner the way they want to be loved and effectively tell them how you want to be loved. And that's really important. I know that from my practice, too. And so expand on that a little bit, because it's very important, that distinction.
Yeah, so, people, I think, generally have the best of intentions. And like we see it all the time. You'll have a husband or a wife, or, you know, one of the partners saying, I do this and I do that and I try so hard and I love him or her so much and I do all of these things, and he or she just isn't happy. And then I'll talk to the other person, and the other person will say, yeah, I do not feel cared for or loved or desired. You know, you fill in the blank. So, you know, we do the best we can more often than not. We want to be loving, and if we love somebody the way we want to be loved, and it's not the way they want to be loved, it goes nowhere. It gets lost. So that's why we need to have these conversations. So, you know, the classic example is you have one partner who works all the time, and the other one's really unhappy because their partner's never home. And they'll say, well, I don't feel loved because you're never home. And the other person will say, well, the only reason I'm working so hard is because of you, is because of our family. So we can have these things, so we can do these trips and all, you know, all of these things. And it really is an act of love, but the other person isn't feeling loved. So we need to really communicate about ways that we like to feel loved, things that our partner can do. And that usually works. You know, once we know, we're like, oh, why didn't you tell me that a long time ago?
Yeah, that's a classic example, and you hear it in your practice. I hear it in mine, too, because there are lots of, well, especially the men, the husbands, the partners, who are workaholics, and they are doing it for their family, and the woman wants more attention. I think also kind of as a sidebar, there are a lot of men who are kind of worried about relationships and sexual relationships too. So they know, but work they understand. If they can do A and B, they know they can get C. In relationships, they're not so sure. So they're
right. They do what they stick with what they're good at. And I will tell you, while traditionally it has been usually the men, now I'm seeing, and I think you probably are too, more women who are becoming workaholics, who are working a lot. And you know, it also goes into sex, right? So a woman might not be feeling really desired or loved. And he will say, well, but I'm always asking you for sex and you're always saying no. And she'll say, well, you asking me for sex, you know, at 11 o'clock at night when I'm exhausted, ready to go to sleep, doesn't help me feel loved or desired. So, you know, we always go back to, you know, hate to be so repetitive, but it really always does come down to really good, effective communication, which can be fun, you know, getting to know, you know, your partner and having them understand and know you. It doesn't have to be difficult or horrible. It can be exciting and adventurous.
It can be. And expressing gratitude can help remind us of the good qualities of our partners. It can remind people to attend to the others in their lives, and particularly the primary other in his or her life. To be grateful.
And it goes both ways. When we are appreciative or we live in gratitude, it feels really good to the other person because we all want to be appreciated. But the other side of it, which I think is even more powerful, when we are living in appreciation and we're focusing on the things that we're grateful for, then we are happier and, you know, we're more loving, as opposed to thinking about the things that we don't have or the things that are not right or the things that our partner didn't do exactly the way we want them to do it.
And that's
so it feels
so
bad
true.
Both ends.
That's so true. And I've said for years that many relationships die from emotional undernourishment because people forget to say what they value and appreciate about their partner. So I encourage
that. Undernourishment.
Emotional undernourishment, yes.
Yeah.
And so speak up.
Because
when couples can speak up, it creates good feelings. And, of course, the good feelings draw people closer. And, I know we're on the same page about this, but both men and women enjoy being told they're attractive and the other good things that the other appreciates about them. So you have in your book, let's see, what is it? It is Appendix A, Exercise 2, to explore and share the ways you and your partner feel loved and cherished. That's a really, I do that too. I kind of call it a little differently, but it's the same thing, the adoration list. I get them to ask their partner to write down 7 non-material things that would make him or her feel cherished by you, and then to make a similar list for yourself, I say.
And sometimes people don't even know themselves. It takes them some time. And to go back on something that you said earlier in the show is when we speak in positives, it feels better on both ends. When we're having these conversations, we don't want to tell our partner what we don't like or what we don't want. The conversations want to be about the things that they do that can help us feel loved. And so it may be things that they used to do, maybe things that they haven't done or things that they are doing. But when we can talk about those things that feel so good for us, that's going to be pretty motivating, as opposed to, you know, I don't feel loved when you don't do this thing or when you say these things. If it's in a negative, it doesn't get as well received and it doesn't usually end up giving us the outcome that we want.
I agree, Lori. And I have another example for our listeners. I think a low quality expression of gratitude may focus on the object. For example, thank you for cooking dinner. I was really hungry. So, but it's better to focus on the other person. So, like the example would be, mm-hmm. you're such a great cook. It's so thoughtful of you to cook for me. So,
yes.
the gratitude then focuses not on the object, but on the person.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So true. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it like that, but yeah, mm-hmm. it's so much more meaningful and powerful. And you know, this idea of, you know, Thanksgiving is a time that, you know, we usually, I think a lot of people have the tradition where they all sit around the table, they're with family, sometimes they family they haven't seen all year, and you know, they all go around the table and talk about things that they're thankful for. So it is a time of year that brings it to our attention, but it doesn't have to be, right? It doesn't have to be Thanksgiving. When we make the decision to be grateful, to express our gratitude or our appreciation all the time, every day, not just on Thanksgiving,
exactly.
It feels really good. And, you know, I like to say we're one decision away from changing our life. And we're also one decision away, from changing our relationship, right? And it really
can
be.
Changing our life, changing our relationship. Good, yes.
Yeah. And so even though I have 21 decisions with more action steps than decisions, but it's just you only need one. It could be anyone. And I actually think that appreciation, you know, being appreciative and expressing appreciation or living in gratitude or appreciation is probably one of the best decisions we can make.
I absolutely agree with you. I Brian and I have been together now 7 years, and I'm so grateful for that. And early on, we identified that we thank each other a lot. You know, well, thank you for this. And
yes.
We're always expressing appreciation. I have some tech problems. It's probably my age. But anyway, my computer went back. It was a default thing, and it went back to a form that I did not like. And Brian made time out of his day to come over and fix my problem. Lovely little things like that.
He's a good man. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? It's so important. And I think some of it has to do with age. I know Alan and I were like that. And, you know, people think they don't think they need to say thank you to, let's just say, for example, the man usually pays for dinner. That's, you know, maybe a bit old fashioned, but just as an example, it could be the woman. But you're married and one person pays for dinner. Or does the grocery shopping. And a lot of people think, well, we're married. We don't have to say thank you. Or somebody washes the dishes or cooks dinner. And you think, well, yeah, I don't have to say thank you. That's what they're supposed to do. But no, we should always say thank you. And Alan and I did that all the time. And I think
I
never
did
that in my earlier relationships. Right? So I think there's something about we are truly, when we get older and when we recognize what a really great person and a real love feels like, to be so appreciative of it. You know, we don't usually appreciate things as much when we're young. So, I mean, it's part of it. I don't think we have to be older to be appreciative, but I do think that we don't take things for granted so much, you know.
No,
as
and we have a
as we
have a more of a perspective. We can look back and say, well, for instance, you just said it. With Alan, you were more grateful. I mean, you said the words.
I've never been with a man so fabulous, you know, and I appreciated everything about him and everything he did, and he did the same. And, you know, because neither one of us had been in, you know, our great relationship before. Otherwise, we wouldn't have found each other. We would have been in another relationship. So usually our last relationship is our best. I don't know if it's my last one yet, but, you know,
I hope not, Lori. You have so much to offer. You are such a beautiful woman. Inside and out, you are such a beautiful woman. And, of course, I mean, I know this as a widow, too, that there has to be the grieving time. And, but then, you know, your book is about decisions, and I imagine that you've made a decision which may get derailed at times, but a decision to move forward as much as you can, as much as you, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I'm taking my time with the relationship thing, not quite there yet, but I'm certainly open. I mean, if some fabulous man came knocking on my door, I would answer it.
Right.
But I probably won't go answering on his door. But, you know, I just want to mention this because, you know, loss, we talked about loss, and we can talk about the positive things, but when it comes to pain, loss, those things that we all experience in our life in different forms, in different ways, and this is a really important thing, we can get stuck down there in that place of pain, that place of anger, that place of just deep sadness, whatever that might be. And I always say it's okay to have those feelings, but one way to get unstuck is to go to a space of appreciation. So even when we're in a difficult place in our life, when we can focus on our blessings or things that we appreciate or that we're grateful for in our life, it will get us unstuck from that deep, dark place that we all go to and we all experience in our life. So it's good in those times, too.
I think that's such an important thought as we approach Thanksgiving. And at the top of the show, you mentioned working with people who are depressed, and as I have, and sometimes, like, if somebody's depressed and alone at Thanksgiving, and I have suggested this, and it's been followed through a few times over the many years I've been practicing, that go to a soup kitchen and volunteer and help people who are less fortunate. And that can give the depressed person a little perspective and maybe help them count their blessings.
Yes, and it's kind. So we have a double. One, puts things into perspective for us. We can feel grateful. And two, we're doing something kind and loving, and that feels really good, too.
Yeah, there have been a number of studies on intimacy. And so a variety of studies confirm that we tend to bond to people who are kind, sensitive, and thoughtful, that feelings of love can emerge especially quickly when someone deliberately changes his or her behavior, you know, like maybe giving up smoking or drinking to accommodate our needs. And then, so kindness, accommodation, and then forgiveness. Forgiveness often causes mutual bonding because when one forgives, which is really an inside job, one shows vulnerability.
It's for our own mental peace and, you know, for our own well-being. The other person may not even know that we forgive them, but when we don't forgive, we live in that dark place again. And, you know, look, there are times that we have people in our life, sometimes they're even family members, that are not kind. And, you know, it would be easy to stay in a place of anger or blame or whatever, judgment. And again, this isn't easy work to do, but regardless of how somebody else is, even if they might not be treating you with kindness, when you can go to a place of kindness and love and forgiveness, it will give you peace of mind and you will feel better, regardless of what they do. And that's not easy. That's very difficult
to
do.
It's very difficult. We've had so much in the news lately about sexual harassment. This is a departure, but I heard
so important.
And one of the morning talk shows, I have it on while I'm getting ready for my day, like putting on my makeup and so on. One of the commentators said, regarding sexual harassment, Pandora's box is open and she is pissed. I thought that encapsulates it really well.
Yeah, yeah. Man, and she's not ending. I mean, it just keeps going and going, but it's not like this is new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all being finally spoken about. There's a space to be able to do that, and I think that is important for a lot of people to be able to heal. And, you know, even the people who are guilty of the behavior, I actually think it's important for their healing as well, although they may not agree right now. But if this is something that they've been living with and holding in, although maybe some aren't even aware of what they were doing, but I think probably more are than that are not,
mm-hmm.
It takes a toll on us. It does. And so to be able to have it all out for whether you are whatever end you're on, this is something that is important for people to be able to get through, and it is definitely a shift in our world right now, and it's important. And it's sad. It's just mind-blowing, but here we are. Something that's
here
been going
we are.
On for a very long time. Yeah.
Oh,
this
yes.
is a whole new world.
I mean,
yeah.
I had some in my youth. I was... Fortunately, I was able to deflect it and stand up for myself, because even in my 20s, I had enough confidence, and I wasn't about to be a victim of sexual harassment or worse. But I'm just saying that that's me, but there are lots of women that
yeah.
are confused. I was reading a long piece in this morning's Seattle Times about Charlie Rose, and he's the last person you'd think of in a way, because, you know, you admire
yeah.
him and in his
yes.
high-level interviews and his, but apparently he's been, according to a lot of women, a toxic bachelor who has acted inappropriately, and I'm really glad that he owned up to it, just like Louis C.K. has. I don't admire the men who have not.
Right.
You know, they deny, deny, deny.
Yeah, it takes a man and
mm-hmm.
a lot of strength to be able to own it. And look at, I mean, in some sense, you know, these men were sort of victims too, in a way that certainly they have control over their behavior. But this was the environment, and it was been told, like, yeah, this is the world that we live in. This is what happens. And it doesn't excuse the behavior. Absolutely not. There's no excuse for the behavior. But it does explain a lot of what's been going on. It's kind of been the norm for so long. Nobody was talking about it.
Yeah, and I suspect that it is with a very powerful, wealthy man. He's often... I'm stereotyping a little bit, but he's often narcissistic, and the narcissist has these feelings of entitlement. I'm entitled to a woman,
yeah.
even if it's against her will. I mean, it's pathological.
It's about power,
but,
not about sex. Yeah. Don't you think
yeah,
it's more about
power,
power than
mm-hmm.
about sex? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I always tell people, you know, people who come in to see me who have, you know, who have had some sexual abuse, or experiences in their life, that's not sex. It's not sex. It's power. It's abuse. It's a violation. It's violence, you know, violence at times. But, you know, to confuse that with sex, which, you know, you and I, when we talk about sex, I mean, that means love. That means pleasure. That means fun. It means all these wonderful things.
All these wonderful things, yes.
Right, and when they get these things confused with that word, with sex, no, that isn't sex. All of those things that those men did, those are acts of violence or power or abuse. But this idea of sex, and sometimes with some of my clients, we just decide to not call sex sex anymore. We'll call it making love or whatever it is that they want to call
yes.
it. Because the word has such a negative connotation for them, and to really be able to differentiate between what that was and what it is that you're striving for, or you're longing for with someone who you actually care about.
is a very different thing, and that can be, it can be problematic.
Lori, how did you ever, I'm thinking in your youth, did you ever mm-hmm. encounter sexual harassment that you can remember?
Yeah. Time, many times. Oh, yes.
I mean, if you don't mind just talking about a little bit.
No, not at all. I mean, mm-hmm. in the workplace, in, you know, I remember there was an uncle. I was young. He was not a blood uncle, but my father's wife's other wife, not my mother, brother. So he was older, and I was like 15, and he definitely was inappropriate with me. Mm-hmm. So lots of inappropriate sexual behavior. Sometimes I didn't even know it was inappropriate because, you know, I was young and I thought, well, this is what happens, mm-hmm. even in relationships. So at the time, I never felt like, oh, this is horrible. I didn't feel like it was a horrible experience. Kind of like you, I've always been a pretty strong person. But when I look back, I go, oh, my God, yeah. I mean, definitely in the workplace, there was definite, I quit. There was something that went on where I was pretty much being coerced to do sexual favors, but I didn't, and I left. You know, I didn't think about suing or doing anything, retaliating
right.
in any way at the time.
Retaliating.
People didn't
mm-hmm.
do that. Yeah, and it just, it didn't really seem like a thing, like a big thing to me. But when I look back at it, yes, I mean, I remember there's even a doctor I went to who, you know, was being very sexually inappropriate with me.
Really?
So,
oh, my goodness, yeah. A doctor.
And I didn't feel traumatized. Mm-hmm. You know, you grow up being a girl and you just kind of expect these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you expect these things, and this is why it's so important, and this is what happened. What I mean, like, this is just sort of like, this is the norm. You know, these young, gorgeous women in Hollywood, it's just like, they accepted it because, well, that's just what they thought happens, because that's what does happen. So now that it's being talked about, and now people are realizing, oh, wait a minute, that was absolutely not okay, and now I am going to speak up and have
yeah.
a voice about this. But I think a lot of these women didn't even occur to them. One, there might be consequences. I mean, that one's an easy one, but some probably didn't even really think about it. They just kind of thought, well, this is what happens. This is the world we live in. They accepted it. They accepted unacceptable behavior.
That is it, precisely. They accepted unacceptable behavior. And now, finally, there's permission to talk about it.
Yeah, don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
And that's the good news about all of this. You know, it's still tragic, but the good thing that's coming out of this, as we know, out of all suffering and pain and tragedy, you know, has the potential to come, you know, good things can come from it and growth can come from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the case in this one too. Not that we wish for tragedy and horrible things to happen, but you know.
No, but I think
that's the way it works.
It's cathartic and I think there's already been a shift. I mean, women are just not going to so easily accept this.
Yeah, and I don't think men are going to, they're going to at least think twice before they do anything like this, and probably not going to act in the same way as they've been acting.
Exactly.
They realize there are consequences.
Or they'll think, oh, am I going to be exposed next?
Right. Speaking of choices, here's an example. You can choose A or B, and there are positive and negative consequences to each one. Think wisely. Choose
yeah.
wisely. And, you know, yeah, they might want to masturbate or, you know, get their rocks off or whatever it is that they've been doing or use their power. That may feel good for a moment, but the price that they're paying, I think they're going to realize that it's not worth it.
I'm suspecting that Harvey Weinstein has got to be in the depths of depression. I mean, his scandal.
His wife. He lost his wife. He lost everything.
Yeah, it started it all. And, I mean, his life is ruined. And so many other lives have been ruined. and even Charlie Rose. I wouldn't have ever thought that of him. I like him so much, but
you never know about anybody or anything, and that's another point. We just don't know what other people have done or what they've gone through. We really don't know. And from the outside looking in, things look very different than the reality. And that's true in this case, too. I mean, even Harvey Weinstein, I don't think anybody would have guessed that this was going on.
Well, in his case, I think there have been rumors for years.
Yeah.
And he's in the movie business, and there are so many hopeful women. And, of course, the idea of the casting couch has been around forever.
Right. So much power. It's power. So
power.
Much power. And, that's a whole other phenomenon. It's like, what's it like to have that kind of power? Like, how do you put that to good use? And is it, especially if you think about people who are young with all of that power, all that money, all of that power, how can they get through that and be good people and make good choices? And it's interesting because we know that we think it like young child stars or people who had a lot of money or fame or power when they were younger, oftentimes they end up, not all, but many of them do end up, drug addicts or, severely depressed or suicide. I mean, just horrible things happen. So there's something that happens to someone when they're not ready, when they don't know how to handle
that kind of
power. So that's a whole other field, right?
That's a whole other show. So I'm
on the show, right?
I'm glad we departed from our main topic of gratitude with Thanksgiving in a couple of days here. But I think it was appropriate for us to digress a bit because it's so much in the news about sexual harassment.
It's all relevant, right? It's about doing the right thing. It's about being kind. It's about being thoughtful. It's about being accountable. It's all of those things, and certainly about decisions and being clear about, the decisions and the choices that you're making. And it's easy to make the wrong decisions and to not be kind and to do those things that are not just hurting, people who we love, but hurt or our relationships, but hurting us. And so to remember, and that's why I'm glad we're talking about it, that we don't have to wait for Thanksgiving to be thankful. If we can make one change in our life is to really live in gratitude, really appreciate all the things that we have and all of the wonderful things that our imperfect partner has, all their qualities, because they're always going to be imperfect, just like we are. But I think just to be grateful that they put up with all of our, flaws and imperfections is something to be grateful for too, right?
Yes.
None of us are easy to live with.
So I want to read about this guy who was married or has been married for 40 years. And he wrote an article in The Atlantic back in 2013. And he said, "My wife and I are into our fourth decade of marriage. As I think of the ages of my life and how our marriage has moved within each, I've been blessed with the time to learn that the love between two people is sustained by the multiple roles of lover, partner, friend, and champion. Through all of that," isn't that lovely?
Friend,
and champion. "Through all of that, I've learned a great deal about myself. And for all of that, even the smaller pieces of it, I am grateful. I would not be who I am today. I would not feel the strength and capacity I feel now. And I would not have the lovely prospect of dancing through the next age with my darling wife. I am grateful, and I say it to her. Express gratitude often. Isn't that a testimonial? Wow.
Wow. Yeah. That's a man.
That's a right? real man.
That is a man.
And
men,
his wife
listen,
is
that's
probably...
what you want to aspire to. Yes. And look at, he's happy. I'm sure. I mean, I can guarantee you that he could create a list of things that his wife does that make him crazy. Right?
Yeah.
Or the things he doesn't like. We all have that list, but you don't hear any of that. You just hear about the gratitude that he has. And that's living in that place. So that's love, and that's beautiful. And what a great thing to aspire to, men or women, to be like that. Yeah. Wow. I love that. Thank you for reading that.
Well, you're welcome.
Inspiring.
I just was so inspired by that. He has a perspective of 40 years. In fact, the title of the article was What 4 Decades of Marriage Taught a Grateful Husband. That's the title of the article.
Yeah, and I think if we could have a conversation with him also, he would probably tell us that there were, and I think he did allude to it in some way, that there were difficult years, but he's grateful for those too, right? Or difficult moments,
right.
Whatever those might be. That's part of it. It's part of, you know, the growth and the appreciation and all of those things. And that's important too. It's not just about, you know, living happily ever after and, you know, being madly in love all the time. Because it's easy to be in love when everything is great. But when you get through the hard times, that's the love, that's the strength, and that's what we're talking about. And, you know, Thanksgiving is a time where, you know, we're talking about people, the families, they get around the table and they see each other, and some people dread it. I mean, I have clients, I'm sure you do, they're like, oh, we got to get together with, you know, my family or with my husband's family, and oh my God, I can't stand being with them. And, you know, so we don't get to choose our family, right? So there's a lot of that going on, and, you know, we don't all have family, and, you know, you don't have to be with them all the time, so that's good. Maybe once a year is enough. But to be able to, because sometimes it's enough, sometimes it's too much. But, you know, if you can, I encourage all of the people out there who are going to be sitting around a table with people that they don't necessarily like very much, you know, to give it a try and try to live in this place of acceptance and gratitude. It's just a, you know, very short time that you're going to be with these people. Get curious, you know, get to know them better. You might be surprised to find out, you know, they're not quite so bad as you think, or maybe there's some things going on that you're just not aware of. But to be grateful for family, even if they're less than perfect, which, you know, they oftentimes are. And just like our partners, none of us are perfect. And it can be a time to maybe forgive, maybe look at things in a different way. It is Thanksgiving towards the end of the year. And I'd like to think of, you know, New Year's as being a time of transition. We can transition at any time, but the New Year seems like a good time to do it. And so maybe there's some forgiving or some healing or some talking, some things that could be done, even this Thanksgiving, that can help bring you forward to be, you know, in a better place next year as we get closer
to that. You say it.
Crazily.
Dr. Lori, you say it so well. You really, really do. And I think if we can, in some of these instances, people, if they can suspend judgment and be fully present, and as you said, be curious about somebody. Maybe you don't know everything about the struggles that this person in your family had. And maybe around the dinner table is not the best time to have a full disclosure, but you can be... You can be friendly. You can be loving. You can, as I said earlier, you can suspend judgment.
And just I like the suspend judgment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, accept them for who they are. Again, you get to choose how often you spend time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, maybe not the dinner table. Maybe it'll be, you know, while you're having a piece of pumpkin pie and watching the game.
Yeah.
I don't know, however that works. But, so it's a good opportunity. Holidays are good opportunities to celebrate and to do things that we don't do all the time, but also to remember we can do these things all the time. We don't have to wait for a holiday. So that's really
exactly
what we're talking about, right?
Exactly right. Yes, we don't have to wait. The same guy. I don't think his name is even here. The one who wrote Four Decades of Marriage has taught me. He says this part alludes to something you were saying earlier. Be partners. Where else is the safe place to grow, stretch, and struggle? You were talking about struggle.
Mm-hmm.
From what other place can two people stretch their individual selves? Use that partnership for your own growth, for your common good, and for your shared future. Oh, I think that's beautiful, isn't it? It's a muscle that gets better with use. We actually do have the best opportunity for personal growth in a committed, loving relationship. And some of that has to do with the mirror neurons in our brains that reflect back the other person.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, learning to be more accepting and appreciative and all of those things as well. I don't think anything promotes our growth more than our intimate romantic relationships.
Yeah.
I think you agree with me there.
Absolutely.
With no other person are we so vulnerable. I mean, ideally, right? Our true selves, and this person sees all of us, you know, the best of us, the worst of us, and our pain and our joy and all of those things, our nakedness, literally and figuratively.
Right.
And when we're with somebody all of this time for all of these years, ideally, 40 years, I mean, you know, there are couples who are together even longer, and, you know, some who don't get to spend that much time together. But it is just a wonderful journey, and all wonderful journeys have the struggles in them. It's part of the journey. Keeps it interesting.
Part of the journey, and if you keep your eyes open, you can learn and improve, and that's what this guy is talking about in his article for The Atlantic.
I like that he used the word champion too.
Champion. We want to support each other. You want to be teammates, don't you?
Yes. And you want to know you're on the same team.
Right. And, you know, I know after Charlie died, I missed that aspect of our relationship. I'm going to guess you're missing that aspect with Alan, just having a teammate, a supporter, a champion.
There's no replacement. You know, I have wonderful friends. I am really blessed with wonderful friends. It's not the same. Definitely not the same. But, you know, I'm grateful for the love that I do get from my friends. And Alan's family in England are incredible. And I love them dearly, so I'm grateful for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, there is definitely, I mean, I'm not going to lie, there's definitely a void there. And I just recently went to Italy, where, you know, it's my happy place. I go to Italy, you know, pretty much every year. I didn't go last year. I wasn't able to do it emotionally. So I went this year, and I was with a girlfriend. We had a wonderful time, but I really felt that void of not having Alan there with me. So it was,
of course,
like I said,
and you learned, and one of the decisions you made, and I think you mentioned this in your book, at least I know it. Anyway, you decided to learn Italian and become fluent. That yes. was a decision you
I am,
made.
And I did. Yes. Yep. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that was way before Alan, but.
I know. But
yeah,
you had just so many.
And
you
that
had,
was a decision.
Yes. And you had some very happy trips to Italy with Alan. I think, Lori, it was courageous of you to go back this year.
It had to be done. You know, in that book, Plan B, what's her name? Such a great book. We talked about this before.
The
Sanders, or
the CFO,
I can't think of her name.
Of Facebook.
Oh, here it is. It's Cheryl Sandberg. That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
She talks about her and her kids taking things back. Like, they would do these things. They would have these things that they loved. And after her husband died or their father died, they would want to do these things. They're like, oh, no, we can't do that because it's too hard, because we used to do these things with Dad. And what she did is she said, we're going to take that back now. We're going to take it back. And they did, like, one thing at a time where they would start to have their lives back again the way that they used to, rather than stopping themselves from doing things that they really enjoyed. And I had that in mind when I went to Italy and what she said. And I thought, I'm going to take Italy back. And like I said, I was able to have a wonderful time. I mean, you can't not have a good time in Italy. But I did experience some deep pain. But, you know, again, you can't just have the good in life. You got to have all of it and, you know, learn from it and grow from it. And that was another example where I really had to take some breaths and really focus on beauty and things I was grateful for and, you know, live in that place rather than get stuck in that place of deep pain and missing him. So all we have practicing those skills and strengthening those muscles, as the 40-year guy talks about. Got to strengthen those muscles. So every time we choose to be appreciative or to express gratitude or to act with kindness or love, we are strengthening those muscles and choosing not to be powerless or be a victim, but to take charge of our life and do what's right and do what feels good. We're strengthening those muscles and we're literally rewiring our brain. And everybody
literally,
benefits.
That's
benefit,
right.
Yeah. And the world benefits. I mean, it does. Imagine if people were kind, the world would be such a great place. And unfortunately, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anger, and we see it around us all the time. And, you know, that's where a lot of horrible things happen. So we want to just generate as much positivity and love as we can. And that's why I love being on your show, Diana, because, you know, that's what we're about. I know we're on the same page there.
We are. And I love having
love.
You on the show, and we'll do it again. I mean, Lori, you are just such a beautiful person inside and out, and you have grown through this very painful experience. I hear it, and I think that in general, just to wind up the show because the music is about to start, if we live with gratitude and positivity, the payoff is great. You know, we have more fun, more growth, better sex, and more sustained intimacy.
Absolutely. It's all good. And you know I feel the same way about you. I love that you're in my life, and you have been probably one of the most supportive people during this whole part of my life these last couple years. So I thank you, and I am going to express my gratitude and appreciation for you, Diana.
Thank you. It's back at you, and to everybody, enjoy
everyone
Thanksgiving.
Everyone have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yes. And express gratitude. Goodbye.
And love. Bye.
And love. And love. And love. Bye-bye, everybody.
Oh, I love it, love it, happy feet.